welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. This is Allison Rose Levy. And every week, we're here with you at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, connecting the dots between the things that impact our personal health from our total health environment. And that includes the health of our air, food, water, and air, the health of our communities, and the health of our society. So every week on this show, we discuss a whole bunch of different facets of things that really impact us and the future of the planet. On the show, I very often as well present different actions and opportunities, and we're having some upcoming opportunities with climate marches and other things that we'll discuss at the beginning of the second half hour of the show. There's been a lot going on in the public sphere right now, and we'll do a little catch-up at the top of the second half hour. So we'll be starting right now with my guest for today's show. His name is Philip Camella. He's a lawyer, visionary futurist, and host of a radio himself on Conversations Beyond Science and Religion. You know, occasionally we do cover this topic on the program. We've had Larry Dossey and other people in the past. And today we're going to be discussing Philip Camella's book, which is called The Collapse of Materialism, Visions of Science, Dreams of God. You know, we usually on this program discuss the collapse of materialism in terms of, you know, the social forces that are, you know, kind of driven by a greed and money-ridden ethos at the expense of life and species and human beings and sustainability on the planet. So today we'll be taking a slightly different accent on that, but I'm sure that it will connect around to the main themes and concerns of this program. So it's my pleasure to welcome to Connect the Dots, Philip Camella. Welcome.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Allison. It's great being here. Appreciate it.
Sure. You know, first of all, you know, one of the things that I was wondering if you could let our listeners know, you know, there's been a whole ongoing discussion of materialism versus, you know, quantum science and all of that, and it's been going on for, you know, for quite some time, more and more over the last decade or so. We've had a whole bunch of different authors addressing this, from Deepak Chopra, who's been on my previous program, to Amit Goswami, who's been on this show, as well as Larry Dossey. So I guess my question for you is, you know, every time this topic is kind of presented, it sort of seems familiar. And so what is different for readers who are already familiar with this literature about your book?
Okay, well, I think that the goal here is to take down the current scientific materialistic enterprise and build up a worldview that encompasses both physical phenomena, the things that science studies, and also the spiritual world, the paranormal, religion. And no book out there takes the whole structure down. What we try to do, and I've had Amit Goswami on my show as well a number of times, and Larry Dossey, and there's a lot of people approaching this from similar directions. But what's different about my book is that I try to explain the world as a function of the mind, the same things that modern science says they understand when they really don't. And by doing this, by taking a mind-first approach to explaining physical phenomena, such as the placebo effect, such as life after death, or the paranormal, by using those same mind-first principles, we could turn to things in modern cosmology, such as the Big Bang, the inflationary theory, dark matter. We could start bringing all of those same physical phenomena into one worldview. And so the key here is to change the paradigm once and for all. Most of us know this is where things are heading. What I'm trying
most
to do
most of whom know, because I would say most, you know, I mean, obviously you're talking to the people who are interested in this and sort of studying it, but I don't think it would be really accurate to say that most Americans know, and, you know, I don't think that, you know, from what I see, that, you know, this is a universal concern. So I just want to, you know, mention that. So, and in this program, it's not something we regularly cover, so I don't think that assumption can be made. And in fact, it's a certain group that has an interest in this topic. But the kind of accent of this show is largely environmental. And so people are really concerned about things like continuity and sustainability of life on Earth. Is that, in your view, just kind of a purely material phenomenon that, you know, we don't have to be concerned with because it's unreal or, you know, something like that?
No. First of all, I'm an environmental lawyer. So it all fits together.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately what it means is that in my view and the view of many others, the world is a product of ourselves. And this is the same thing as saying that life is what you make it, that we have
so
to
So we're not a product of the world. In other words, our biological evolution within this host reality of planet Earth is we're not a product of that. The Earth is a product of us. Is that what you're positive?
What I'm saying is that we are part of the dreaming mind of God. Okay.
So then this is a religious belief. Just noting.
This is an updated view of Hinduism. Hinduism.
Okay.
Atman, the self, lays over Brahman. The self is really part of God. Okay.
Okay, so we're talking about God. You know, I just want to note that because, you know, we don't really, you know, people do have different beliefs and cosmologies and everything, but I don't mind discussing them, but I don't like asserting them as if they are a kind of, you know, shared reality that, you know, a lot of people would automatically be believing or buying into, because then that's really a question of faith, you know, and different belief systems.
Right.
So I just want to bracket
before we start giving
religious teachings here.
Right. I'm not advocating any particular religion.
I know. It's very often said that the, you know, Hindu belief systems, you know, do not entail a specific religious practice. But, you know, you're offering, you know, you can call it cosmological or whatever, but you're offering a particular worldview. And so part of my job kind of as an interviewer is to, on the one hand, I have to be polite and sort of, you know, entertain and give you an opportunity to share your ideas. But on the other hand, I also have to honor my listeners who may not participate in your specific cosmology. So, you know, if we want to discuss it as an idea set of some kind, we can do that, but I don't really feel comfortable, you know, asking people to, you know, believe in what it, you know, in what you're saying. So
I'm not asking people to believe in anything. What I'm saying is that the quest of science is to explain the physical world and human experience. And
mm-hmm.
under Fraser, there's a principle of science that says the fewer assumptions made in a theory, the better the theory. What people don't understand right now is that modern science has made an assumption, and this is the independent existence of the material world, which is the basic assumption of materialism. It's the thing that Amika Swami attacks, the independent world. This is an assumption. We believe that a real material world, a machine, exists outside of us, outside of the mind.
I wouldn't characterize the world as a machine. I think calling the world a machine, the world is a living ecosystem. Calling it a machine or, you know, kind of describing it as being akin to a machine, you know, I understand that we kind of try to study the world as if it were a machine, according to science. So we may be on the same page about this, but you know, the world is probably neither a machine nor a mental construct. It's a, you know, it's a living entity of some kind.
That is one viewpoint. What I'm trying to do is to reconcile these competing beliefs and bring them together. because there needs to be, there is one world. We could pretty much agree there's one world. Now, there's some people who believe in a multiverse, okay, which we could put off to the side. And there's some people who believe in multiple dimensions, which we could put off to the side. But we're pretty sure that we live in one world, and therefore there should be one worldview, one theory that unites what we call religion, that unites science, and that also brings in these other concepts, such as Gaia, such as the one world, the one mindset, the famous song, We Are the World, all these uplifting concepts.
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure why, there's a whole bunch of different concepts, out there. So you're singling out certain ones. And I'm just wondering, why we're saying those ones. And, for example, let's take, just in the last several days, there's been a big event in the kind of cultural life of our world with the passing of, Robin Williams, who, had was an extraordinarily creative person, touched a lot of lives, spoke to a lot of people, and was suffering from biochemical imbalances, life challenges, health issues, that he struggled with over a lifetime. And, ultimately led him to take his life, sadly. So a lot of people are kind of processing and digesting what went on there, and as also a cautionary for others, and also to understand, there's a whole bunch of concepts around, I'm just using that as an example, but there's a whole bunch of concepts around that, that have to do with addiction and how to treat addiction and all these other kinds of things that, are not... So when you're singling out the one world concept, you're kind of saying we need to integrate these things, but you're also defining the concepts that we, that you're wanting us to single out and integrate,
Well, I'm trying to take the biggest concepts and so we could talk about them globally. Obviously, there are sub-ideas, mental illness. I know that you've had a guest on your show talk about mental illness, the paranormal. Poverty, the environment, climate change. There's all these sub-concepts. But in general, when you look at what we're doing right now in our world, we have a building where you practice science. This is the universities. And we have buildings where we practice religion. We have two separate
areas. Have places where we grow food. So, this is a particular dichotomy that I understand, you're interested in talking about. But it's not including the areas that we, that my listeners usually talk about are interested in the show. So, there's also an area where we grow food,
Right.
So I wouldn't, there's a, we talk about that a lot. There are, communities where people, experience, working together and not being able to work together well. So,
right.
There are many different kinds of things. So,
Okay, let me add something here that maybe will help. Because this all leads to a good place.
Okay.
Where I come down, and those who read my book, where I come down on this is that we need to direct the enterprise of modern society to nurturing the human spirit, not in exploding particles, not in building bigger bombs. I believe that we are fundamentally spiritual creatures. And therefore, we need to feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, educate the masses, and give people something productive to do. We need to protect the environment. We need to integrate these principles into our scientific mindset, into who we are. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to say, let's not separate ourselves from the world, because when we separate ourselves from the world, we separate ourselves from other people. We get into religious feuds. How many are there going on right now?
Yeah, they're very bad. Mm-hmm.
We separate ourselves from our bodies. We think that they're little robot vehicles that are gonna that get sick and die without any input from the human spirit. We separate ourselves from other people. We tend to think other people are foreigners, aliens. We walk past the homeless. we have not ingrained the oneness of humanity into our modern mindset. And what I'm saying is that we need to understand that if we are one entity, if this is a global village, then that needs to be accepted as true as much as the law of gravity is true. When we do that, then morality, goodness, starts coming from the heart instead of being imposed by a government program. That's really what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to change the mindset. It all comes out in the practical world, Allison. I completely agree with you. All this theory may be, okay, it's very nice. Camilla's got some really interesting ideas. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to say we need to change our mindset. We need to integrate this point that we are spiritual creatures and make it real for us so that we can build a better, safer, more peaceful world. That's what I'm about. I'm about doing it here and now.
For example, in your work, do you go into troubled communities and try to, you know, mediate between parties that are, in conflict? Can this be implied? Because it sounds like, you know, the thing that I'm wondering about is, you know, granted, every individual has to has themselves to deal with, to cope with, to sort of bring around and all of that. But on the other hand, you know, and there has been this presumption over many decades of the spiritual movement, that if we each work individually, and I'm not saying we don't need to work individually, I think we very much do, but there's been a presumption that somehow enough of us will have the leisure or the interest to do this kind of personal work, and then, you know, one by one by one, by the hundred monkey, we're going to sort of turn the thing. And, you know, what instead we're perceiving is, you know, worsening situations due to a whole bunch of, you know, socio-political and cultural structures that right. are shaping people's minds and impacting them. And then you have, you know, a small group of people kind of on the stump and saying, you know, if we each become more caring. I'm totally in favor of each of us becoming more caring, totally, you know. But I'm just wondering, you know, with this global vision of what can change, how effective a strategy this is, even though it's certainly great, you know, to kind of have it in mind and articulate it and everything. Is this really going to be, I mean, you're a lawyer, right? So you don't have tools for working in the social and citizen realm, probably you find that frustrating, I would imagine, or, you know, maybe you've had greater or lesser success in sort of altering those systems. And, you know, I'd like to hear about that in terms of why you turned to this, because of my interest in kind of understanding how to answer the very questions that I posed to you.
Yeah, I'm trying to rewrite the playbook. I think that you've got to change. I'm trying to assist in the process of changing the curriculum, changing the reading list for students and for the public, to change paradigm. Because right now when you take a course at a university in science, you're going to hear about the story of materialism, and then you go to a different building and you hear about Orthodox religion. Right. I think humankind needs a unifying principle. We need one thing to agree upon. I completely agree with you that grassroots, doing it in the real world, feeding people, resolving disputes, making peace is incredibly important. But unless we get that buy-in that this is good for everybody, this is what the world's about, I think we're going to be fighting a more difficult battle. We need to change the storyline, the theme of the movie. We need to make vision that we're at the end of the day, at the end of the story, humankind unites over a common goal.
See, well, I mean, I think we have a common goal in terms of, you know, the environmental crisis and everything. You said you were an environmental lawyer. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, that kind of aspect of your work that you've been doing and whether you're still doing it or whether, you know, you hit impasses in doing it? I'd love to hear about that aspect, too, because, you know, from that as part of why you're doing this, obviously.
I've been practicing environmental law for over 30 years.
Wow, that's terrific.
I'm an environmentalist at heart. Mm-hmm. I think that nature is an astounding miracle, and I think it's our responsibility to protect the world we live in, which is the environment. Mm-hmm. And it's a, as you know, it is a economic, political issue, because the classic debate that goes on and on and on are the forces of the economy versus the forces of the environment.
That's right.
I just got done with a matter where a lot of food, and I won't name the food, a lot of food was contaminated. And mm-hmm. if you look at the Food and Drug Administration, they allow certain foods, such as chickens and eggs, to be contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, because if they took it all off the market, there would not be enough food for people to eat. Mm-hmm. And so this is an example of the tension between economics and the environment, and it's a great area. It's a never-ending tension, but I think at the end of the day, for those who have read Silent Spring by Rachel mm-hmm. Carson, which set
right.
the tone for this, mm-hmm. that this is our world, and we need to protect it. And you're right. I go deeper than just pure environmentalism. I really believe this world is part of us, and we have to take responsibility for it in the same way we take responsibility for our own actions.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's connected to us. And so I come at it from a little deeper
mm-hmm.
sense.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's what I'm about. I think that the key thing here is that the issues are complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't just assume that, you know, for example, that there could be no pollution. There has to be some pollution, otherwise we would not have energy, we would not have food, we would not have cars. But it doesn't mean that we cannot gradually decrease the pollution and eventually get the clean energy. I completely agree with that.
Mm-hmm. How would you, what do you see as a pathway to that?
Well, simply put, I think there needs to be incentives for clean energy. Mm-hmm. I think that we can move to a complete clean energy economy. And in terms of visions, I think that is one vision. I think it fits into my more philosophical, you know, spiritual vision, because I think it all comes together. What I'm trying to say is we've got to make this real. And one way you make it real is to clean up the world you live in, and so that you could sustain a life, a long life, and a healthy life. This is really about sustainability. It's about sustainability not only for the environment but for ourselves. Why do so many people care about health? Because we want to sustain our lives on this planet as long as we can, because it is a miracle. It's something that may only be given to us once. This is probably our only chance to get it right. And we know that if something makes us healthier, stay younger longer, sustain our lives longer, then that is something we're going to spend a lot of time focusing on. And so, to me, it's the message is sustainability on the environmental side, sustainability on the health side.
Mm-hmm. How do you, you know, what do you see as like the ideal mix in terms of, you know, balancing the needs of, you know, the environmental and the economics in terms of energy?
Well, I think that there needs to be long-standing, long-term incentives
mm-hmm.
to move from dirty energy, such as coal, to mm-hmm. clean energy, such as wind, solar, hydropower, and even mm-hmm. nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
I think there needs to be long-term incentives. One of the problems we have, and I'm sure you're aware of this, is that when administrations change, policies change. When Congress changes, policies change. If you look at the renewable energy field, one of their big complaints is that the incentives are always temporary. These people have to get investments.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get investments, and no one's going to make a $1 billion investment if the tax credit for that expires in a year and a half with
right.
no certainty it's going to be renewed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's clear, so it really is a political issue. We need to have people with the courage to set these policies, having a long-term vision, a 50-year vision, instead of a 2 or 3 year vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we need to wean ourselves away from dirty energy to clean energy, and we need to stay on that course.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, this is going to work out. I just hope it doesn't take some catastrophe, some kind of Hollywood movie catastrophe where a glacier glides into, Hawaii or something, before we act.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really the question right now. So I think ultimately the environment wins, but we have to wean ourselves away from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And so it's from doing that kind of work that you then began to look into cosmology in the way that we've been talking about.
Well, it's really the opposite. I was a philosophy major in college, and I wanted to find a way to unite religion and science. I studied, and I thought I came up with the idea, and I spent the next 40 years developing a college paper into what is now the collapse of materialism.
Mm-hmm.
Along the way, I went to law school. I had a natural connection to environmental law. It all fits in with me because
mm-hmm.
it allows me to protect and work in a field where the world we live in is the topic of conversation, namely the environment. It,
mm-hmm.
it allows me to keep up with the laws of regulating the environment and really to help people do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like anything else. You have to have at least one foot grounded,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm not a yoga guy who sits under a tree and just ponders these things all day long. I do ponder these things, but I'm firmly rooted in the real world. I work in a big law firm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's an interesting combination in that you're trying to come at it from both the practical side, because what very often happens in these conversations is that it ends up sounding like matter doesn't exist at the end of the day. So first we start out thinking with matter being all important and money being all important, and then at the end of the day we can wind up with it's all just in our mind, and then there's no kind of middle ground. So it sounds like you are working to construct something at the middle ground in your regular life. And, I think what we'll do is I'd like to hear how that's reflected in the book, philosophy that you're articulating. But I think what we should do is take our station break, which we take at kind of halftime of the show so that we don't start and then have to interrupt ourselves and everything. So we'll take our break, and then when we come back, we'll kind of go into that question.
Sure.
I think that'll work well. And I think this also makes it something that our listeners can relate to more in this program. And I'm glad we kind of went the long way around in getting there. So we'll be hearing the kind of show halftime music shortly. And then when we come back, I'm asking listeners to please stay with us and connect the dots. We are talking with Philip Camella about his book, The Collapse of Materialism. We'll be talking more in depth about the book when we come back to the second half of the show. Stay with us.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. On Thursday, August 7th, the Freedom News Hour will broadcast its last show on PRN. On Thursday, August 14th, we'll start my new show, LOA Today. What's LOA? It's the Law of Attraction. In short, it's the principle that every thought you think resonates with the universe to bring you even more stuff on the same spiritual wavelength. Think about getting a parking spot next to the door, and lo and behold, it's right there when you arrive. Who knew that a libertarian could be into woo-woo? Well, this one is, and we've got some really cool stuff planned. So join me, Walt Thiessen, and my team of co-hosts as we explore the law of attraction and its role in everyday life. That's LOA Today, Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, here on PRN.
I'm Sam Thurman of A Just Cause Coast to Coast. Join me along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez right here on Progressive Radio Network, that's PRN.FM, each Sunday morning from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time for A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice.
Have you heard? The Burt Cohen Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. Hi, this is Burt Cohen. Recent shows include the status of freedom of the press under President Obama. Is it time to make the Federal Reserve a public utility? Is the dream of Israel over? How is the Tea Party like the Confederacy? The true history of the National Rifle Association? And how is 2014 like 1914? The Burt Cohen Show, every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. There's really nothing like it.
Gary Null's incisive documentary and informational films on today's most crucial issues have won dozens of international awards. As a free service to listeners, acclaimed films such as War on Health and Seeds of Death are available to watch in their entirety online. Just go to YouTube and search for Gary Null. Thank you for your continued support.
Hi, this is Paul Capilcante, host of The Vinyl Experience, and you're listening to PRN, your source for the best in progressive conversation, news, and entertainment.
Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of the show. This is Allison Rose Levy. Today we're talking about the collapse of materialism with environmental lawyer and author Philip Camella. If you're just tuning into the show, you can find the first half of the program later today in the Connect the Dots archives on the Progressive Radio Network. If you're enjoying the show, please like us on iTunes and pass this information along to your friends who might also enjoy the show. Just wanted to bring up a little environmental action as we do on every show. Saving the date for the Global Frackdown, a global day of activism for a ban on fracking. This will be taking place October 11th, 2014. More than 150 organizations have already signed on as partners. It's the third Global Frackdown. You can learn more about how to participate in this Global Day of Action at www.globalfrackdown.org. In the first half of the show, we were talking with Philip Camella, who is a very interesting blend of trying to kind of construct a big picture view of a science that would better serve us and the Earth. Due to his background, long interest in philosophy, and background as an environmental lawyer. And he's kind of built a sort of overarching cosmology that he details in his book, The Collapse of Materialism. And he's also a host himself of a radio program called Conversations Beyond Science and Religion on webtalkradio.net. So tell our listeners, if you would, Philip, you know, how does your cosmology kind of create, you know, this thing that you've put together, create a better superstructure for our work in becoming more caring, humane, and protecting the Earth?
Okay, well, this is where things might sound a little radical, but one of the precepts of science is that, as Einstein said, you can't solve a problem with the same level of consciousness that created it. Another way to say the same thing is that you have to go outside the box. So what I've done in the book is I've taken the idealists. There's these idealist philosophers in the 17th, 18th century that believe that mind was preeminent, that the world is mind oriented, that the world we see is really an idea in the mind of God. And these guys were shunted off to the side when Newton came to the foreground and when modern science started developing explanations and theories about the physical world, including Newton's theory of gravity, and then it moved into Darwinian evolution, and we are still in that sort of flow of science. And what I'm saying is, let's stop the action for a moment. Let's see whether we're going down the right path. Let's question these modern scientists that have assumed an independent material world. And so what happens when you take that assumption away, the result is that we could explain the world as a united dream, as a projection of the mind, something that we're participating in right now. We are living out a story, the story of the mind coming to know itself.
Well, you know, this is where we get, like, back into that dematerial opposite end of the spectrum problem here. You know, isn't there sort of something in between here? Because this is what happens with these cosmologies. You know, they go all the way from, you know, it's greedy, it's over-materialistic, and then we soon wind up with none of it is kind of real and it's just a thought projection.
Here's the difference. Mm-hmm. The difference is that we are part of the projection. We are spiritual creatures in a spiritual world. The world is real to us. This world is as real to us as mechanical world would be to a robot. We just haven't understood it. So we are embedded in the world. It is as real as worlds get. And in my opinion, it's the only real world. And so all this does, it doesn't change the world. It doesn't change the way it looks. It changes our perception. What I'm trying to do is change our perspective, our view of the world, so that we appreciate it more. Nothing changes. Matter is still matter. The world is still solid and hard. It's just that we're part of it. So what this does, Allison, it unites us with each other and with nature and with other people. It provides a unifying theme for us to move forward together. See, that's where I'm going with this.
People who have a problem connecting with people on a heart level to understand another person is like me. Another person feels as I do. Another person suffers as I do, and I feel compassion for the other person and their suffering. The people who, for whatever reason, can't go there because they had hurtful experiences, they have shut down because of things that have happened to them or their ancestors or, you know, things they're struggling with, those people who therefore can't automatically, through feeling connection, do, you know, what you're describing, which is care about another person as if they are myself, care about my neighbor, care about my community, care about people and animals around the world. The people that can't do that, to see that we are all alike, one, in this together, how is having a cosmology going to change that?
Well, imagine if the schools taught this as being the leading scientific theory of the day, instead of being raised in a culture where people are different, where there's different nationalities, creeds, colors, economic brackets, where we compete on a solo mission. Imagine being taught that in 2083. We realize that a theory that combines humanity into one spiritual global entity better explains the world. If we're raised in that kind of culture, it becomes more natural to us. I'm looking way down the road here. I don't expect to change the person right now. What I'm saying is that if this is true, it's going to remain standing, and that's where we should point our scientific enterprise. This is because this provides hope. This provides hope. It provides something for everybody. We don't have to build our own castles in honor of ourselves. We have one home here. It's called the planet Earth, where we could all thrive and succeed and sustain a happy life.
But the reason that that's happening otherwise is it's because science has been diverted to enterprise undertakings, and all of the government structures participate in it. The jobs that people must accept, the realities with which they must cope economically and otherwise, are all driving them down what you're describing very correctly as a, you know, sort of desperate, competitive, individualistic pathway, right? I completely, you know, agree with you and everything on that. But the thing is, if those structures don't change, then A, they're not going to really be very interested in this different science. And B, unless the structures change, it's kind of academic in a certain sense what the science is. The science that we have is science that's in service to these larger forces and entities, you know?
Right. I agree with that. I mean, I agree that, I mean, let's take a simple example. Let's suppose right now the military budget is however many hundreds of billions of dollars. And the budget to pursue particle physics is another $1 billion. If you take that money or a good portion of that money and you devote it to job creation, building homes, feeding people, we're going to live in a lot better world. And the reason, one of the reasons for the military budget, without getting too controversial here, is probably because we're afraid of other countries. I mean, we don't have really something to agree upon right now with the Russians or the Islamic world. So we are in this fear of being attacked, and so we spend all the money going down that direction, leaving less money for what I would call improving the state of the human spirit. And so I completely agree. This has got to be a structural change. Mm-hmm. But where I come down is that we need to change the mindset, the theories behind this, the long process here. I'm not trying to be an overnight success, and Lord knows I'm not going to be an overnight success. I'm trying to be right in 100 years from now or 200 years from now. Mm-hmm. I'm not naive enough to think that someone's going to read the book and say, oh, you're right, let's change everything. It's a gradual process. But if somebody said, you know, without vision we're nothing, we need to have that goal. And I think that we need to change, as I said, the rule book, the playbook, and start reading from one manual that directs us all towards a common good. Mm-hmm. So that's really what it's about at the end of the day. It's about sort of changing the paradigm from the bottom up so that we can move together in confidence and align all these government programs with something that's got more long-lasting benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. That does sound like a good idea. When you're projecting forward for 200 years, do we have that kind of time frame, given where we are now with environmental destabilization?
Well, when I ask people on my own show how long they think before there is a change in paradigms, and of course my show, I have a lot of people who are in the new spirituality movement, although I have scientists as well, I usually get the answer 20 to 30 years, okay? And and so
they think the paradigm can change
for a paradigm shift to make to a consciousness-based, spiritual-based worldview. And I think a lot of people are trying to accelerate it. And even though it may sound, I don't want to make this sound religious, what I'm really saying is a world where humanity comes first, mm-hmm. instead of bombs, scientific explorations, and environmental degradation, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that it is our task to accelerate this. And I really think, Allison, I think the environment is staring us in the face. I think that's something that it's very hard to argue that we should not be protecting the environment. And and I think that, you know, when you look at the history of environmental laws, it's a sad story, but many of our environmental laws were born in catastrophes.
Mm-hmm.
Love Canal was the origin of the Superfund Act. Times Beach began a lot of the regulation of PCBs. The L.A. smog, where people were fixated, began the Clean Air Act. The Cuyahoga River caught fire. It had a lot to do with the Clean Water Act. What are we going to wait for a catastrophe before we do something about global warming? And I think that that's really – isn't that the question right now? I mean, it seems like you know, are we going to wait for that catastrophe?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a good question. So so how does catastrophe relate to the prediction that you're making about a change in 30 years? Do you think it will be induced by a catastrophe? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, I think, you know, with regard to the environmental side of this, I hope it doesn't require a catastrophe. With regard to this spiritual evolution that I'm an advocate of, I think it's a function of open-mindedness as generations change, as people are born into this world and live, and they want a better life. They want more than their parents had, not material possessions, but they want a richer experience. They don't want to go off the war. They don't want to work in factories that don't have any future. They don't want to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
That we start appreciating the potential, the divinity that we all have inside of us. And I think that as that goes on, we're going to see a spiritual evolution that will eventually become a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I'm not the only one. I'm not the first person to have said this. This is the literature is pretty well established on this point. But I'm trying to make it real, because we cannot, in my opinion, we can't package this idea, this happy thought that there's a potential for a better world. We can't package it and put it off the side and say, well, maybe somebody will figure it out in the future. I want to do it now, because I know that we are here now. I'm here now. We have one chance to get this right. So I'm all about shaking up the establishment and trying to get people to question some of these assumptions we've been given by the scientific community and by the religious community, question them and start trying to build a world where we could agree upon something that's fundamental to who we are.
And then you'd like to see that placed in the science curriculum, is that right? Is that how people are going to...
Well, eventually, the leading theories are taught in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1,500 years ago, they were teaching Ptolemy's epicycles as being, the revolution of the planet. They were talking about bloodletting, right? In the medical schools.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think 100 years from now, we'll look back upon this era and say, God, they actually used chemotherapy patients. And we actually thought that 90% of the universe was invisible. Isn't that strange that there were multiverses? I mean, this is going to take time, but science itself progresses. It's a self-correcting methodology.
Well, that is true, yes. That's one of the great advantages of it.
Right. And we forget, you know, and we tend to freeze it in place and think, oh, this is the final truth. This worldview that we have. I mean, I read one of your blogs about the medical profession, statins, and GMOs. I mean, there's so much subjectivity and bias in the scientific community. We don't appreciate it, that it shades into cosmology and particle physics as well. That's what separates me. I'm one of the few people that question those theories, because I think that there's a lot of bias in those fields as well, in addition to the medical profession. And we need to question them. And you know what? If what I'm saying is right, it's going to remain standing. If not, it's going to fade away into the dustbin of history. It's that simple. I just think that the truth remains standing. And when you give up your power of questioning, you're giving up part of yourself.
I agree with that.
You're transferring your thoughts and your mind to somebody else and saying, these are difficult questions, guys. You figure it out and come back to me when you have the answer, and I'll accept whatever you want. You know, if that's what we do with organized religion, with our souls, and we do it with science, we just don't appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So today I believe in questioning these opinions, question everything I say, but question these big opinions, and if we do that, we might at some point reach something we could agree upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right about that. And even on the level of materiality in science, we could find out things on the material level about how things are affecting us, affecting the Earth for good or bad, and we're not studying those things. You know, we're studying within a model, within a pharmaceutical model. But that's not even getting into the cosmology piece of it. That's just, you know, you could remain within a material model and still be, looking at things that are beyond the pharmaceutical. But we're, you know, so we're very trapped in a scientific belief system that there is one science. And so, totally with you on that point. But my question is, like, how do we, part of the problem that the reason why I've been kind of challenging you a good bit here is that the people who traditionally have been arguing for, you know, the sort of mind spirituality dimension are not taking action on the social community side of the equation, and that abandons that side to those with more greed-driven values. You know, how does your analysis of this help to reconcile that problem, for example?
Well, what I like to do is that I like to start a business that would be like Goodwill, that would start small and do act out the things that I've been talking about. That is one of my goals, and particularly in my next life, in my next job, in my next career, because I do think, obviously, you got to start small, but I completely agree that talk is cheap, okay? But as I said already, I think you have to change the playbook and then go from there. Because otherwise I think you're fighting a losing battle. You've got to bring the heart with the mind and the mind with the heart. It's got to be together.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to this, you know, I sense, you know, there's this natural instinct or to say, well, you know, the scientific establishment is so well rooted. I mean, how can anybody expect to change this? And I've addressed it already. But one of my favorite quotes is from Max Planck, the founder of quantum theory, who said that science progresses funeral by funeral.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've got to wait for the old generation to go by, and then you've got to start anew with a fresh tablet of paper, with a blank computer screen, and you've got to write the story again. You know, I think that looking at it from the long-term view, the truth will come out, but I completely agree with you that at the end of the day, it's got to happen outside. It's got to happen between men and women, between people of different countries. We have to start honoring the human spirit more than we are. We have to realize that we are part of the same vision, part of the same goal, part of the same thing. We're in this together, and we've forgotten that what unites us is much stronger than things that divide us. That mm-hmm. is the number one thing. We just haven't appreciated the depth of that truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is all, you know, yes, it's a lot of high-sounding, happy talk, maybe. But we've got to, but you got to have that, I think. But then you got to carry it to the field. You know, mm-hmm. you've got to do that. And I think that we need leaders. We need more people like Bill Gates and maybe Oprah that goes out there, and even Robin Williams. I read, you know, had a comedy benefit for the homeless. It's one of the things he did. And so we need to bring that out to the field and get the leaders of our society to devote more attention to improving the state of humanity instead of building themselves bigger houses and yachts, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But there's a ways to go, but we've got to start somewhere. And I'm optimistic that we will make it. And so that's where I devoted myself to doing. I devoted myself to making it happen.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I wonder about, because of the way, you know, mass media, mainstream media is constructed, you know, in order to get a lot of people participating, you kind of, you know, the traditional thing is to seek, you know, as you mentioned, the Oprahs of the world and others. But, you know, those people have been entrenched in doing things for, you know, the last generation or so, and that hasn't, you know, worked all that well for us. And even the Oprahs of the world and the Bill Gates of the world, you know, they have to invest in something. They have their houses. They have to, you know, kind of maintain their assets. And so this, you know, I don't know what their investments are. Maybe, you know, they're just incredibly green and wonderful. But, you know, the likelihood is that they aren't.
So I
just wonder how the whole model of trying to enlist people from the top like that, you know, how effective that really is.
Yeah, I think I agree with you to a large extent, and I've come to the conclusion that if we're going to change things for the better, it's going to be bottom up and top down.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, and maybe middle both ways for
mm-hmm.
all I know,
but
because I don't know what's going to work, I do know that leadership is important. I agree with you that the celebrities are sort of a mixed bag. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I think it's much better to change the government programs, for example, and to change the political mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I don't know what's going to work. All I do know is that moving forward and doing what each of us can do to improve the state of humanity, whether it's reading more books, opening your mind to new ideas, contributing more to goodwill or charities, working for a social organization.
Oh, it sounds like we're getting to the end of our program here, but thank you so much. I think those are all really terrific suggestions, and I thank you for the work you're doing and appearing on the show. Listeners, The Collapse of Materialism by Philip Camello. He's been our guest today on the show. Please pass it along to others and come back next week for our next edition of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. We're here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much, Philip.
Thank you.